Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 15th of January, 2020. Oh, if it weren't for having to do this, I'd have gone and jumped off the bridge somewhere. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, and I suffered through. I put it through. I hate myself. I watched that Democratic debate. Holy Frank Tanana. These people are nuts, and I don't think Bernie really wants to win. I don't think Bernie really wants to win. CNN doesn't really want Bernie to win either. What a god-awful, boring debate. The first 45 minutes was hypothetical situations about foreign policy, which are as useful as masturbation is in losing your virginity. It was just a complete waste of time. I don't know what these people are thinking. These moderators clearly wrote all of their questions with other journalists inside a newsroom. They didn't talk to real human beings at all. There was nobody who made it through that first 45 minutes who doesn't hate themselves as well, or wasn't doing it on a dare or a bet or for work. I don't know which it was, but it was terrible. Oh my God. And then when it could have gotten interesting, it didn't get interesting. Nobody was awake there. It was when you get your last chance to really make an impression on voters before they go to the caucuses in Iowa, you do that. And you show up and Mayor Pete sounds like one of those dolls where you push the button and it says something, except the batteries are running low. It was just terrible. Anyway, we've got a ton of audio and a whole bunch of other things to get to, so let's get to it. But first, I'm going to tip my hat. I'm wearing my replacement's hat. Tip our hat to our sponsor, ancientlifeoil.com. The CBD craze is real. The CBD craze is happening. CBD oil is taking over the world, and you find it everywhere. They're selling it all kinds of places, and you don't know if it's any good or not. If you're curious, if you're CBD curious, ancientlifeoil.com is the place to go. AncientLifeOil.com, 100% organic CBD oil. It's not got THC, and it's got such a minute amount you could never get high off of it if you drank the whole bottle. But you don't have to drink the whole bottle. You just put a few little drops under your tongue, and it makes a huge difference. It relaxes you. It takes away the stress. It helps with the aches and pains. It is amazing, and it does not get you high. Sorry, stoners. Search for yourself. Enter CBD oil benefits into your favorite search engine. See what people are saying. Better yet, talk to people you know. You'll be surprised who's using this stuff. If you're friends with my dad is using this stuff. My dad is 79 years old, and he's using CBD oil. He has come around. He is a believer, thanks to AncientLifeOil.com. It really does. My eyes strain at the end of the day, and good Lord, my eyes strain after watching that debate. It just melts away. It's a miracle, in my opinion. But check it out for yourself. And then don't buy the stuff at the gas station or the grocery store. Try that weird thing. Go to ancientlifeoil.com. Check it out. Check your flavor. Pick your flavor. Check the ointment if you don't want to put the drops under your tongue. They've got topical ointment. They've got everything you ever need. And then enter promo code Derek at checkout, and you get special discounts. Don't forget to hit the apply button. You'll love it. You'll be a believer. AncientLifeOil.com. They support the show. We support them. I love how it goes. You guys support all of us. So thank you for that. Okay. Where to start with this ridiculous debate? I was sitting there watching this going, there's a whole bunch of nothing going on here. That first 45 minutes, I didn't know if there was anything worth playing at all, because there really wasn't anything worth playing at all. The big thing that everybody was waiting for on the way in to the debate was whether or not Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren would talk about their little mix-up. The story that Elizabeth Warren is pimping around that back last year, well, back December of 2018, Bernie Sanders and her got together for a nice candlelit dinner, a nice romantic candlelit dinner to figure out where the gulag should go for dissenters. And Bernie let drop in that private meeting between just the two of them that he doesn't think a woman can be elected president, which I talked about yesterday. I just don't buy that Bernie Sanders turns into Andrew Dice Clay in private. You know, listen, broad, you ain't getting nothing. Now take your top off. Let's see them boobs. I just don't see that. I would believe a lot of things about Bernie Sanders. I have a lot of problems with somebody who would honeymoon in the Soviet Union. That's just me. I'm weird that way. But when it comes to he's a misogynist and Bernie Sanders, I'm not buying it. Elizabeth Warren has a long and storied history of lying. I'm a Native American. I was fired because I was pregnant. Elizabeth Warren's lies are legion. It's kind of funny because the media, particularly the Washington Post, is compiling a running list of every Trump lie. And if all you ever hear is the number. All you ever hear is the number. Ooh, 10,000, 15,000. Donald Trump is lying constantly. If you look up those so-called lies, the vast majority of them are insignificant things. Like he said, we had 57% support. Poll shows only 55%. Those are the sorts of things that the media counts as lies when it comes to Donald Trump. When it comes to Elizabeth Warren, why, she's a truth teller. You can buy her snake oil all the time. You smoke 'em wampum with her. And they let her slide. She's not labeled as a liar. Her lies are really significant. Her lies got her jobs. Her lies helped get her tenured positions at law schools. Her lies denied other people jobs. Her lies have caused harm to other people. And she gets a slide. She gets a pass. She gets a hey, whatever. They do smoke the peace pipe and they just move on and pretend that it didn't happen. We'll all just part as friends, shall we? Maybe they're all bucking for positions in a Warren administration. I don't know. But when it comes to Bernie, I believe Bernie when Bernie says something. I disagree with it vehemently. I think most of it is absolutely 100% crazy and wrong, but I believe Bernie believes it. When Elizabeth Warren says something, I don't believe that she believes it. I think she believes that she can get enough people to believe it, that it'll be to her advantage. And that is the difference between the situation. Now, I want to play a clip for you because the moderator went at Bernie Sanders, asked him directly whether or not he'd ever said these things about Elizabeth Warren. Did you ever say that a woman could not win the presidency? Which should be, you know, just dismissed. It should be laughed at on its face. And Bernie Sanders kind of did laugh at it. He kind of did laugh at it, but not, he handled it poorly in the end. Because this is CNN's Abby Phillips was the reporter at asking the question. And you can tell that she either does not like Bernie Sanders or loves Elizabeth Warren or both. I don't know which answer is true, probably a little from both. But listen to this exchange. This is Abby Phillips, journalist, essentially accusing Bernie Sanders of saying this. And it took them long enough to get to this. It took like 45, 50 minutes to finally get to this thing. You would think that, you know, CNN had this big scoop yesterday. They might want to mention it, but apparently people who work at CNN don't read CNN and don't watch CNN, which you can't really blame them for. But listen to this exchange.
Let's not turn to an issue that's come up in the last 48 hours. Senator Sanders, CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement, that in 2018, you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it.
Now, don't you love the framing there? Elizabeth Warren confirmed in a statement yesterday. Well, Bernie Sanders denied it in a statement yesterday. Why is Elizabeth Warren immediately given the mantle of truth and Bernie dismissed? And then the framing of the question, why did you say that? Not did you say that? Why did you say that? Because he had to have said it, because Elizabeth Warren confirmed it in a statement yesterday. And again, Bernie denied it in a statement yesterday. Bernie denied it pretty vehemently. Elizabeth Warren said, yeah, he said it, but I don't want to talk about it anymore. That was her statement yesterday. So which one sounds more believable? Not, you know, they're both pretty good at being professional victims, but Elizabeth Warren has made a career out of it. So I would be a little hesitant in framing the question that, why'd you say that? Why did you say that? And he comes back and says, I did not say that. He should have gotten pissed off there, and he should have called out this so-called reporter for asking the question that way. He should have reminded her, well, I denied it yesterday. Why are you giving me no credence whatsoever? But he doesn't. He continues.
And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did run afterwards. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States? And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
He gives an incredibly long answer when he didn't have to give a long answer. Of course, he turns it to attacking Donald Trump at the end, but he sounds horribly defensive. That's just how he talks. But he comes off terribly there. And he really should have made the question about the questioner and the framing of the question. And then he goes and he should have thrown in the, yeah, I've been saying that a woman should be president forever. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. But he's just not that kind of guy. He also screwed up there significantly by saying, no, I'm not going to talk about this very long. I want to put this behind us. This is, again, the replay of the 2016 debate when he was asked about Hillary Clinton's emails. And his answer was, I'm so tired of talking about your damn emails. Can we stop talking about it? That was helping you, you dumbass. And he just disarmed himself. He just took one of his best weapons away from himself. That he would never say that, that Elizabeth Warren is not telling the truth if he doesn't want to say she lied. She's not telling the truth. And instead he goes, I don't really want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. Of course, the reporter who does not like Bernie Sanders comes back and she wants to be, she wants an unambiguous answer, which is the answer he should have given in the first place.
So Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Okay, so there he is. In addition to his statement denying it yesterday, vehemently denying it yesterday, when he has a chance to do it live, he goes, well, that is correct. No, mumble. He should have said, you're damn right I never said that. And I would never say anything like that. But he's just not that kind of guy. He's such a wimp. He's such a wuss. I'm strong enough to take on Donald Trump, but no, I'm not strong enough to take on Elizabeth Warren. I'm afraid she'll scalp me or something. So then the reporter, in air quotes, turns to Elizabeth Warren. Now listen to the framing of this question.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I disagreed.
Now, the crowd laughed. Bernie kind of, you could almost hear him there. You can hear him if you see the video. He just and shakes his head. And that's it. That's it. He let it go. That was, Warren goes off on a rant about how women win everything and men suck and everything like that. But that was the extent of the exchange. The reporter ignored Bernie's two denials, his unambiguous denials, his vehement denials, and immediately turns to Bernie. What did you think when he said that? What did you think when this horrible sexist pig said that thing to you, Elizabeth? Were you okay? Has the counseling kicked in? Are you feeling better these days? It's unbelievable. The crowd laughs, and Bernie just... Bernie should have interrupted. Bernie should have been outraged. Bernie should have stepped up. But Bernie is, and forgive my French, but he is like every beta male left winger out there. He's a pussy. That's the truth about Bernie. When confronted, he always backs down. He pretends to be tough, and I'm the only one who can take on Donald Trump. This is why he's going to lose. This is why he's going to lose. The crowd laughed. The crowd was waiting for it. The crowd was disgusted at what the reporter just did. They're laughing at the reporter going, oh, God, what these people. And Bernie just goes, oh, well, what are you going to do? And just shakes his head and moves on. This is, I'm tired of talking about your damn emails, and just lets it slide. This is letting Hillary Clinton walk all over him in debates and walk all over him on the campaign trail and not hitting back because he doesn't want to get into an argument with them. Democrats want, or at least polls indicate, they want somebody who will fight. Somebody who will fight Donald Trump. Donald Trump isn't going to go easy on whoever the Democratic nominee is. And the voters know that. Theoretically, you would assume Bernie Sanders knows that too. Yet here he is, just backing down from a fight. Well, I don't want to get into it with Elizabeth Warren. We're friends. Your friend is stabbing you in the back. They're not just sticking a knife in your back. They're stabbing you in the back repeatedly, over and over and over again. And you're just sitting there going, well, this is so ridiculous. And then the reporter comes up and says, well, what did you think when he was saying this? When he grabbed your boob, what did you say? What? No. What? No. She could have said anything in that moment. When Senator Sanders pushed you down that flight of stairs, Senator Warren, and then kicked you when you were 9 months pregnant right in the stomach, what were you thinking? And Bernie would have sat there and said, well, I did no such thing. I did no such thing. That's what, now, do you want that person, if you're a Democrat going up against Donald Trump? If you're a normal human being, an American, do you want that person going up against any world leader? He would cave to Justin Trudeau of Canada. That's not what we need. Justin, I'm sorry. You know what? You can have Maine. Go ahead. Just take it back. I don't know if you ever had it or not. But if you want it, if you think it belongs to you, go ahead. Have it back. I don't want to fight about it. Bernie blew his chance last night. I know Bernie wants to be super progressive, but he is. There's a fine line between being super progressive and being a flat out pussy. And Bernie Sanders was definitely the latter in there. And that was the big fireworks last night after the debate. They turn to each other and they give the handshakes and everybody's like, good job, good job, good job. It's a formality. It's mostly for the cameras. And Bernie actually extended his hand out for Elizabeth Warren. And she didn't extend her hand back. She came up and started talking to him, presumably about this. And he kind of looked like he got a little bit angry, so he might be capable of it. I don't know. But they exchanged words. Nobody knows what was said, which is weird because CNN, there's microphones all over the stage. Somebody at CNN had to have picked that up on a microphone. I don't buy for a second that wasn't picked up by, I think they're all wearing mics. I think there are podium mics. There are hanging mics. There are mics everywhere up there. Plus the directional mics on the camera. There's no way that somebody didn't pick up what was going on, what was being said up there. But it looked like Bernie Sanders really kind of, after she rejected his handshake, got a little bit mad, and they supposedly talked about getting together later to hash this out and clear this up. But why would Elizabeth Warren? She's basically got people thinking, who never in a million years would have believed this about Bernie Sanders, thinking that maybe he did, is he didn't deny it vehemently. And when the reporter just ignored it and asked that ridiculous question of Elizabeth Warren, do you think when he said that to you of Elizabeth Warren, he didn't object. He didn't step in. People notice little things like that in debates. People notice the body language. And more importantly to Democrats, they notice the defeatist attitude of, well, I'm never going to convince her, so whatever. I don't know. Maybe there was a misunderstanding. I think we witnessed the end of Bernie Sanders as a viable candidate. I don't know. I mean, I can't get in the mind of a Democrat because, well, they don't have one. But we'll see how this shakes out, because it was a shocking moment. And again, Bernie should have been, if Bernie was not prepared for that, he should fire his entire staff. And if that is the best that his campaign advisors came up with, he should fire his entire staff. And if he came up with that on his own, he should fire himself. It was a ridiculous, ridiculous moment. There were a couple of other moments I want to get to before we move on to other things. Let's stick to Bernie for a second. If you think that Bernie Sanders is for the little guy and he's not going to jack up taxes on the middle class, you got another thing coming. He's basically saying he's going to slap a 4% tax on everybody making $29,000 or more. And $29,000 is not making you rich. It's not making you a millionaire and a billionaire. And he wants to do it to pay for his socialized medicine. Here's the clip.
On the Medicare for All, one of the provisions we have to pay for it is a 4% tax on income, exempting the first $29,000. So the average family in America that today makes $60,000 would pay $1,200 a year.
There you go. There's the cost of free health care. Of course, that's his estimate. It's going to be way more than that. It's going to end up costing a fortune, and people will have to see their taxes go up even more and more and more. But I just love how he's sitting there going, yeah, we're going to 4% tax. Imagine just a 4% tax. It sounds small, doesn't it? Until you do the math. When you do the math, it becomes horrifying. Then you have Bernie talking about the job of the president, the next president, the priorities of the president. And life is about priorities. You can tell a lot about somebody based on their priorities. Listen to Bernie Sanders talk about foreign policy. Now, this stuff actually plays with Democrats, but it'll disgust and disturb you. Listen to Bernie Sanders talk about how his job will be to rebuild the UN and essentially cede our foreign policy to the international community in the name of peace, of course.
Today, our infrastructure is crumbling. Half of our people are living paycheck to paycheck. 87 million people have no health care or are uninsured, underinsured. Got 500,000 people sleeping out on the streets tonight. The American people are sick and tired of endless wars, which have cost us trillions of dollars. Our job is to rebuild the United Nations, rebuild the State Department, make sure that we have the capability of bringing the world together to resolve international conflict diplomatically and stop the endless wars that we have experienced.
We're going to get to.
Gee, diplomacy. Why didn't somebody think of that before? Don't you love these people? They really believe that they can talk their way out of anything. Oh, we can just sit down with the mullahs. They'll tell us the truth. They'll be completely honest with us. And then once we sign a deal with them, their word is bond. And there is no way in God's green earth that they will ever, ever, ever say anything bad or do anything bad ever again. It's a pipe dream. Unfortunately, that pipe is a crack pipe, and they're smoking it. Speaking of smoking crack, Joe Biden, he didn't actually embarrass himself too much yesterday. He didn't have any senior moments that were particularly noticeable. It did seem like his left eye was a little more bloodshot than a normal eye should be, but maybe he was high. I don't know. Well, he was talking about child. He's asked about child care. Should the government provide child care? See, government makes life so expensive that both parents have to work, and then they make childcare so expensive and require it to be regulated instead of, you know, being able to be freelanced and figured out by the parents. The government involves itself on the state level usually, that they can't afford that. One of the things I was hesitant about taking one of my jobs was I would take it and a huge chunk of that money would go to childcare. So I said, no, I can't do that. I'm not interested. And we managed to work out something where I could work from home back in the day. So that was great. That's not common. But should government be providing that? No, you have to make choices and sacrifices as parents and as human beings. And the government is trying to inoculate you from those as well. But that's not really what was the outrageous thing that Joe Biden says here. It's that Joe Biden is lying. He's lying. I would say he's wrong, but he's lying because it was his life. He should remember this. Joe Biden talks about when he was a young senator back in 1973, and he was a widower because his wife and daughter had tragically been killed in a car accident, that with his two sons, he too was a single father, and he too could not afford childcare. He's trying to relate to average people. Of course, he can't relate to average people. He's been a senator since he was 29 years old, but he's trying. Here's the audio, and I'll explain how absurd it is after you hear it.
President Biden, infant care is more expensive than in-state public college tuition in more than half the country. Do you support free universal infant care?
There should be free universal infant care, but here's the deal. You know, I was a single parent too. When my wife and daughter were killed, my two boys I had to raise. I was a senator, young senator. I just hadn't been sworn in yet. And I was making $42,000 a year. I commuted every single solitary day to Wilmington, Delaware, over 500 miles a day, 250 miles a day, because I could not afford, but for my family, childcare. It was beyond my reach to be able to do it.
Sounds perfectly understandable today, doesn't it? But we're not talking about today. We're talking about 1973. And in 1973, $42,000 a year was nothing to sniff at. In fact, that was a hell of a salary. The Washington Free Beacon did the math. They write, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden said Tuesday's debate that he could not afford child care during his early Senate days, though his salary at the time amounted to the modern equivalent of $250,000 per year. Yes, when you adjust for inflation, it goes up. It says, while living on $42,000 a year would place Biden in the bottom half of U.S. households in today's dollars, it placed him firmly among the richest Americans when he was sworn in as a senator in 1973. Biden's freshman salary was $42,500, which would be the equivalent of $256,370.77 in 2019 dollars, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calendar. Isn't that interesting? Somehow, so Joe Biden, he wants to portray himself as middle class Joe, and I feel your pain, guy, and I've been there and I've done that and I know how it is. And here he is talking about how poor he was when he was making the equivalent in 1973 of $250,000 today. It's his own biography, and it always trips him up. He always screws up on it. This is a lie. This is a bald-faced lie. Now, I have no doubt that Joe Biden went back home to Wilmington, Delaware every night. He did it when I worked in the Senate, and he was vice president. Well, he wasn't vice president then. He was still a senator, but he did it when I was living in Baltimore, and he was vice president. He did it when he was a United States senator, and I worked in the Senate. He would take the Amtrak train back home every day. It was one of the nicer qualities, one of the cooler qualities of him. That should have been enough. It should have been, you know, it was tough. I had to do it. I know how expensive it was or whatever. Or I chose not to do it, but it would have been tough for me to do it. But he could have made the point that I made a point to go home every night to be with my boys. That would have been fine. That would have been endearing, and it would have been accurate. Instead, he had to lie about it or misremember or whatever his excuse is going to be if he's ever confronted with this.
And what is also interesting is the Washington Beacon, Free Beacon reports, in a 1981 op-ed for the Salisbury, Maryland newspaper, The Daily Times, titled "Congress is Supporting Deterioration of Family," Biden even argued that families in his income bracket were precisely the sort who did not need the federal government's help providing for their child care. Quote, Joe Biden wrote this back in 1981. Now, remember, he'd been making $42,500 in 1973. I assume that the rate increased by 1981. He writes, quote, "What I do not accept as legitimate is a social policy that encourages a couple making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or more a year to evade full responsibility for their children by granting them a tax credit for daycare expenses." Isn't that interesting? That is a stark difference, a massive difference from what Joe Biden just said last night. Will he ever be asked about it? It's doubtful, but he should be, because the math doesn't add up. It's his life. He should remember these things. Apparently he doesn't, which really isn't all that surprising. It's actually more disturbing than anything else. When it comes to Joe Biden, he just always does this. He embellishes his own personal life. He rewrites his own history. His history is, you know, pretty amazing. Elected to the Senate when he's 29 years old. He had to wait until his 30th birthday, which was past Inauguration Day, to be able to be sworn in. That's an accomplishment in and of itself. He should be content with that. But he can't. And now the Democratic voting base feels as though they have to identify with you. He's a white guy, so he's got that against him. He has to show somehow that he's just an average guy and he feels their pain. It's okay that you don't, Joe. We know your biography. You've lived your life in public. We get that you've lived a pretty pampered life. You haven't been a multimillionaire until recently. Your kid has been, but you haven't. We get that. But we also get that you haven't gone hungry. You haven't missed many meals. That's just the way it is. And I wouldn't be surprised, by the way. I'm kind of curious if Joe actually bought the train tickets back and forth from Delaware, because those can be expensive. I don't know if anybody will ever look into that. I wouldn't even know how to go about looking into that. But that should be a personal expense out of his own pocket. Maybe the Senate office could pay for it. We'll see if anybody ever brings it up. Maybe if he wins the nomination, some conservative outlet will do it. There was Mayor Pete up on stage, too. You wouldn't know it, really, by watching the debate. The guy has no energy, brings no excitement, no charisma whatsoever. He talks like he's on Quaaludes. It's just terrible. He was asked about his health care plan. And it's kind of interesting, his answer here, because, well, it's telling. And it's a little bit of hypocrisy, because he doesn't like free riders. He wants to force everybody to buy this plan or a plan or be forced into a government plan that they have to pay for because free riders are bad. Well, I'll tell you why that's a little bit off in Mayor Pete world after you listen to this.
Mayor Buttigieg, you're selling your plan as Medicare for all who want it, yet your plan would automatically enroll uninsured Americans into a public option, even if they don't want it, and force them to pay for it. How is that truth in advertising?
Well, it's making sure that there is no such thing as an uninsured American. Look, the individual mandate was an important part of the ACA, because the system doesn't work if there are free riders.
The system doesn't work if there are free riders. Now, you go back to the first debate, and you go back to his own words, and you go back to the words of all the Democrats, and they support giving free health care to illegal aliens, people in this country illegally. Guess what they would be? They would be free riders. That would mean that they... program that he's putting forward, he's admitting the system doesn't work if there are free riders. But I'm going to allow a lot of people on for free, you know, 11 to 22 million, depending on the estimates. They're going to get in for free because they're not Americans. They're the preferred class of human beings. But those stupid, stinky, smelly Americans, they can go right to hell. they can get bent. They've got to pay, and they've got to pay more. They got to pay extra to make up the difference. They've got to pay for the free riders. You see, it's really getting to the point in this country where you're much better off if you are in this country illegally than you are if you are a natural-born United States citizen. It's like these people are unaware that the internet exists. It's like these people are unaware that people have memories. Everybody up on that stage beclowned themselves in one way or another. They contradicted themselves in the past in one way or another. Or they said things that are so beyond the pale crazy that I don't know who they're trying to appeal to. Elizabeth Warren, in her closing statement, went off again about the murder of black trans women. That's an epidemic in this country. It's horrible. And it's just not true. Who are you trying to appeal to with these pitches? There is apparently a fairly large constituency in the Democratic Party that just is masochistic, that wants to be told how awful they are and how horrible this country is. I don't understand it. I don't claim to understand it. I don't want to understand it. But they are legion, it seems, that everybody on that stage appealed to them in one way or another. All those six rich white people up on that stage. Celebrate diversity, right, Democrats? Okay, after the debate, let's cover what else is going on, because tomorrow morning when you, well, it depends on what time zone you're in, I guess. When you wake up or when you're at work or what have you, whenever 10 p.m. Eastern time occurs for you, Nancy Pelosi is scheduled to hold a press conference where she will announce the managers, the House managers for the articles of impeachment. Who do you think is going to be on that list? The short list, it's going to include Jerry Nadler. It's going to include Adam Schiff, which is kind of interesting because Adam Schiff theoretically could be a witness. You know, he's been involved with the whistleblower for some time. How involved and for how long and how connected to the whistleblower is Adam Schiff? We don't know. We may have to find out, but it'll be interesting if he has to take off his manager hat and go up and testify if, in fact, there ends up being witnesses. What the Democrats got for their delay is not much. Not much. They just kind of look like fools. They looked like this. Well, they looked like what they are. They look like political hacks playing a political game. There are some squishy Republicans who might vote for witnesses. We shall see. But it looks like the format is going to be, come on over, make your case, and then we'll decide if we need to hear anything more, which is not really what the Democrats wanted. They wanted guarantees. They had demands. They had things they were insisting on. And it just doesn't seem like there's an appetite for this. There are some squishy Republicans who might side with Democrats. Mitt Romney seems kind of worthless. God, Utah, you got nothing better. You gave us Mike Lee, and then you give us Mitt Romney. Why? Because he's a Mormon? Is that it? Anyway, this whole show is supposed to start on Tuesday, it looks like, as of now. Who knows? Given the way the news cycle has worked, Tuesday of next week is five lifetimes away. So who in the hell knows what's going to happen between then and now? There's still talk that Alan Dershowitz, who we had on the show last Friday, is in talks to possibly become one of Trump's lawyers during this thing. Or he might just remain an outside advisor, who knows. But he was kind of evasive about what he was thinking on that one during the interview. If you listen to it, you know what he said. But we're finally going to get this show on the road. And this couldn't happen at a better time for Joe Biden. Joe Biden is now going to have, well, let's see, who else is that? Mike Bloomberg, but he's not playing in Iowa. It's going to be Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden campaigning in Iowa for at least the next couple of weeks, starting next Tuesday. Why? Because senators are forced to attend impeachment trials. That brings Klobuchar, not that she's much of a factor, that brings Bernie, and that brings Elizabeth Warren off the campaign trail. One of the things I don't think the talking heads are really considering is how much of a benefit a Senate trial that takes the senators in the race off the campaign trail will be for Elizabeth Warren. The more people hear from her, the less interested in her they become. So the less she's out there in physical form being cornered and asked questions, and the more it's just left up to campaign ads, I think it might be better off for her. Who knows? But Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, Bernie was making actual inroads. Bernie was putting up a fight. And Bernie, for part of his draw, is the fact that he brings out all the young guns. You'd think, you know, Grandpa over there in the Senate wouldn't be drawing young crowds. But A, young people tend to be stupid in general. If you're young, I'm not talking about you because you're listening to this. But they tend to be stupid and not know history. So they like the idea of socialism because, ooh, it's pitched as being fair and wonderful and just so lovey-dovey and everybody gets equal stuff and it's so wonderful. They don't understand the horrors of socialism because they've only ever heard about it in theory and they've been lied to about it. Also, the people that Bernie Sanders campaigns with draws young people. And you, just like the tobacco companies, you got to hook them while they're young. If you get AOC out there or any other, the Gang of Four, with the exception of Ayanna Pressley, who has endorsed Elizabeth Warren, but she is, you notice how, you know, when you talk about the, when the media talks about the squad, they really kind of leave Ayanna Pressley off a lot of times. They focus, whenever there's a story about AOC, it's obviously the leader of the squad. When it's about Ilhan Omar, the anti-Semitic member of the squad. If it's about Rashida Tlaib, it's the other anti-Semitic member of the squad. And they're all racist. Maybe they don't cover it that way, but the media isn't honest. If they were, they would. And then they never really do stories about what Ayanna Pressley is up to. There's nobody, maybe it's because she's campaigning for Elizabeth Warren and the media has kind of moved on from Elizabeth Warren. But maybe, just maybe, I mean, if we're going to live by the Democrats' rules, we should apply those rules to them, should we not? So therefore, that would mean that it is because she's black. Why isn't anybody making that charge? Where is the weekend MSNBC expose about why the media is not paying as much attention to Ayanna Pressley as they are the other members of the squad? Where's the big New York Times think piece on that, delving into how many minutes per squad member in coverage on the cable news networks the squad members are getting? Because she would be getting clearly the least amount of press. It's not likely that she's, you know, the sane member. There is no sane member. She's out there saying crazy and stupid things just like everybody else, but for some reason the media doesn't try to lionize her. They don't try to build her up the way they do the others. Could it be because she's black? Well, it could be that she's just keeping to herself, but I prefer to think it's because she's black, because that's what Democrats would do, and Democrats are horrible racists. So there you go. But Bernie Sanders does attract a large crowd of young people. He's making inroads in Iowa. Now, Iowa's a different kind of situation. You've really got to be a true believer to vote in a caucus. You've really got to. It's not you just show up and starting at 9 a.m., you check a piece of paper and you throw it in a box and you go on about your business. You have to meet there in the evening. You have to stay there for a very long time. You get to argue with everybody else about which candidate is the best one, and the Bernie Sanders supporters go in that corner and the Biden supporters go in that corner, and everybody has their little corner and they argue and they make the case for each one of their candidates and they try to convince more people to come over to them. There's a pool of undecided people who are open to convincing, and it can take hours. It can take a very long time to complete a caucus. Young people don't have that kind of attention span, but if you're a true believer, if you've fully been indoctrinated, if you've been hooked on the needle of Bernie Sanders, you'll stay there all day. If you're older, you got nothing better to do. What the hell? You're there because you truly believe that your life sucks because Democrats aren't in power, and that's your right to be wrong. And seriously, I would say to everybody else, though, if you look externally to solve the problems in your life, you're never going to solve the problems in your life. You are the problem in your life. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that Nancy Pelosi, with this move in holding the articles of impeachment until now, is doing Joe Biden the biggest favor of his presidential campaign so far. The only thing that could be bigger maybe is if Barack Obama actually came out and endorsed him. But he's not going to do that, remember, because Joe Biden explicitly asked him not to, which is garbage. But I just find that horribly, horribly interesting that suddenly it now becomes an imperative that the impeachment trial move forward 3 weeks before the vote in Iowa, right when polling starts to matter and right when being on the ground campaigning starts to matter. And all of, well, all except for Buttigieg's, all of Biden's campaign rivals we'll be stuck in Washington, D.C. What is that, like 500 miles away? Bernie, it hurts. I think Elizabeth Warren, it helps. I don't think that that Nancy Pelosi timed this to help Elizabeth Warren. I don't think that there's any love lost there. I do think that she did this to hurt Bernie Sanders, who has been on the upswing of late. And the Democratic Party establishment, and make no mistake about it, Nancy Pelosi is the Democratic Party establishment. The Democratic Party establishment is not a big fan of Bernie Sanders. They're scared to death that Bernie might win. And anything any of them can do to prevent or hinder Bernie's ability to win is going to be welcomed and applauded behind the scenes, quietly and subtly. But make no mistake, there is a desire to make sure that Bernie Sanders is not the nominee of the Democratic Party. If only, not because the party isn't with Bernie Sanders in spirit. In spirit, they are absolutely 100% with Bernie Sanders. It's amazing. If you think back to what the Democratic Party was pushing and who their candidate was in 2016, yes, Hillary Clinton was a left winger, but Bernie Sanders was thought to be too extreme in 2016 to win the presidential nomination. That was part of the argument that the Clinton campaign made against him. But you jump to 4 years later, and Bernie Sanders is the heart of the Democratic Party. He's driving the debate in the Democratic Party. He's bringing the enthusiasm in the Democratic Party. Mayor Pete is kind of bringing some enthusiasm. He's inspiring some enthusiasm. I don't know how anybody can be inspired by Pete Buttigieg. He's the most boring, low-energy public speaker I've ever seen. Well, Mike Bloomberg, I guess, is that. But Buttigieg doesn't bring a whole lot of energy. Nobody walks out of a Buttigieg event going, I'm really fired up. Now, he got me going. He has applause lines. He gets people to like him. They really do. However, when it comes to a rah-rah speech and a stand on your feet and cheer, ready to go absolutely haywire, I am so moved and so inspired, that's not Mayor Pete. The best thing Mayor Pete has going for him is that he's gay. Honestly, what does being mayor of South Bend, Indiana bring to anything? Race relations in his city deteriorated. The police hate him. The black community hates him. What does he bring to the table? What is the major legislative accomplishment of the mayor of South Bend, Indiana? Where does the, you know, when we talk about a new model for X, Y, or Z in this country, we look to South Bend. How many of you had heard of Pete Buttigieg before he started running for president? The biggest beneficiary of Pete Buttigieg's, that's just going to be a pain in the ass if he wins the nomination to say, the biggest accomplishment of his life was convincing people that he stood a chance to be president. It made him incredibly wealthy. His book sold a ton of copies once he became popular. It's kind of funny because at the last debate, remember, Mayor Pete said, I'm the only one up on stage who isn't a millionaire. I bet you that if you look at Pete's 2019 tax returns? I'm thinking Pete Buttigieg is a millionaire now. His book has been in the top of the charts for a very, very long time. It's sold a lot of copies. He gets a piece of that action every single copy that is sold. He's sold enough copies that it wouldn't surprise me that if he's now a millionaire. And remember, that's how Bernie Sanders became a millionaire. Ah, the beauties of capitalism. Isn't it wonderful? Still, it's going to be Buttigieg and Biden running around Iowa. Now, Bloomberg has his own plan. He's ignoring Iowa. He's not going to be there. They're not going to worry about running into him. Tom Steyer, I suppose, will be running around, but Tom Steyer is inspiring nobody to do anything. Deval Patrick, that's probably the first time in a long time you've heard that name. He's the remaining black guy in the campaign, and he's polling at nothing. 0%. So he's not going to be a factor. The people running around Iowa are going to have to contend with Joe Biden. That means his bus is going to be driving like 17 miles an hour in the left lane. And that's going to be their interaction with Joe. I think people will stop going to diners for a while just because there's a possibility that Joe Biden will show up and interrupt their eating of the eggs and touch them inappropriately. Children in Iowa, be careful. Joe Biden, is there an Amber Alert for a pervert on the patrol? I don't know. But if there is, you might want to activate it out there in Iowa because he's going to be the only one for a while as Nancy Pelosi finally does her business or get off the pot to send the articles of impeachment over to the United States Senate. But who else is going to be on the... I'm going to take a flyer here. I'm going to take a couple of guesses just because I think that it'll be fun. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's no way. God, is there no way? Would Nancy Pelosi appoint Maxine Waters to this thing? She can't really string together a coherent sentence. She's rather unhinged. She's almost uniquely dumb. On the other hand, she is loved by liberals and willing to say anything in order to try and impeach President Trump. So I'm gonna say Maxine Waters won't be one of the impeachment managers. I'm going out on a limb on that. That'll be a long shot bet. Eric Swalwell, I think he's going to be crop dusting the floor of the Senate. I don't think they're going to let him speak much, if at all. But I suspect that Eric Swalwell will be over there. If only the best thing and the only thing that Eric Swalwell has going for him is a willingness to say anything on television. He is one of the least self-aware people on the planet in the sense that he doesn't think he's dumb. Well, I guess I should rephrase that. He doesn't realize he's dumb. So it liberates him. He thinks what he says is bright. That empowers him. Those traits together make him a very useful weapon for Democrats. When they have something crazy they have to sell, they just whisper it into Eric Swalwell's ears and send him up to the bank of cameras, and he'll repeat it. He can't back it up. He's not going to, you know, that pass muster in any sort of follow-up or serious interrogation situation, but he doesn't find himself in those situations very often. He generally preaches to the choir, and the people he does bother talking to on Fox News are like the milquetoast Martha McCallum types of the world who aren't really going to ask any serious follow-up questions or make him stick to it and really hammer him home on getting an answer. So Eric Swalwell will likely be out there if only because he's useful. He can be the village idiot. The village needs to be preached to somebody from their own intellectual level. Eric Swalwell is willing to do it. And you always want somebody on your team if you're compiling a bunch of political hacks together. You want somebody on your team who will we'll take one for the team. Now, Swalwell doesn't know he's taking one for the team. He's going out there thinking he's issuing nuggets of wisdom or what have you. He's not, but he thinks that. And so it allows him to deliver stupidity with an air of confidence, which again makes him a useful member of the team. As for the rest of the team, I imagine there'll be like 6 to 8, maybe 10. There's a lot of speculation amongst the pseudo-conservatives on Twitter, you know, the Bill Kristols of the world and the Matt Lewis's of the world, the worthless people who are more interested in shameless self-promoting than they are in advancing any sort of causes, that Justin Amash should be on the team because he can appeal to Republicans. Justin Amash was a Republican member of the House until he resigned the party and became an independent and voted for impeachment because Donald Trump is so awful he couldn't be a part of what Donald Trump was doing to his party. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is actually enacting all the things that Justin Amash said he ran on, you know, claimed that he stood for. So I'm not really sure. I never understood those people like the Bill Kristols of the world who made a fortune milking people for the we're the conservative cause. We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do the other thing. And here comes Donald Trump who does this, that, and the other thing. And they go, not him. No. Well, did you really believe in those things ever? Or was it just about hammering checks? With most of them, I think it was about getting attention and hammering checks. They've exposed themselves. And where they work now, I'm not sure if Bill Kristol is a contributor anywhere, but he appears on MSNBC a lot because he's a useful idiot and he wants the money badly enough that he's willing to be a useful idiot. But people like Matt Lewis, I've known Matt for a long time. I've known people who've known Matt for years. I don't know anybody who thinks Matt is, you know, I love Matt. I've never heard that said in my life. He is the biggest shameless self-promoter who would step on anybody's neck to get on TV, and they find that useful. He knows CNN hired him because he'll claim to be a conservative, and then he'll go out there and parrot Democratic talking points and bash Donald Trump. That gives CNN the splash of bipartisanship. They're so bipartisan over there at CNN. They have real, true conservatives like Matt K. Lewis over there. God. I almost feel bad for the guy because nobody likes him. But then I realized that nobody likes him for a reason, so I'm fine with it. Those are the people who think that Justin Amash should be on the team because somehow he will have the secret elixir that will get Republicans to listen to the House managers. Their problem is that Republicans have been listening to these people over in the House. They have been paying attention. They have seen the evidence. They've read the testimony. They've heard the stories. They've seen the arguments. And there's nothing there. No matter who the Democrats pick to be House managers, there is nothing that any of them can do or say that can make either of the articles of impeachment a crime. Forget high crime or misdemeanor. They are not a crime. Obstruction of Congress does not exist. Obstruction of Congress does not exist. But even if it did, all the president did and what they're accusing him of obstructing Congress by doing is exerting executive privilege, which is his right to do. If Democrats really wanted to take that on, they could have taken it to court. They could have challenged it in court. Maybe they would have won. Who knows? Nixon tried to exert executive privilege over the tapes and lost, so he had to turn the tapes over. In Trump's case, though, we're talking about witnesses who gave the president, whose job it was to give the president, or still give the president, in the case of Mick Mulvaney, confidential advice, the brainstorming sessions. Most people, if it didn't involve Donald Trump, would agree that a president of the United States should be able to have candid conversations without fear or concern that those would end up public, kind of conversations with their staff to get the best advice possible. Ultimately, the decision is his. The decision-making process is really nobody's business. So I think the president has a very strong case when it comes to exerting executive privilege with these people that he has exerted executive privilege with. Democrats say, no, it's just obstruction of Congress, which again isn't a thing, but they chose not to go to court to try and compel testimony, probably because they say it was because it would take too long, which if our republic is at threat, which they try to say, if that's the case, there is no too long. You're doing it for the good of the republic. You should, of course, go through with it. Yet they also say that act is the obstruction. But they're actually the ones doing the obstructing. They're obstructing the president's ability to do his job well. That would be what the court would decide. Can the president get unsolicited advice, candid advice, without Congress inserting itself in the room? Or can a president not? Democrats are afraid of what answer they would get, so they don't want to go to court. Still, when you got your hands up the butts of so-called conservatives on cable news willing to parrot your talking points, you don't really have to worry about being called out about it. Remember, more people get their news from non-Fox News sources than from Fox News sources. So the message is getting out there. The other charge is, of course, abuse of power, which is, again, not a crime, not a thing. Democrats chose these two. It's a tactic. Democrats chose these two things to charge the president with in articles of impeachment because, and explicitly because, they are not actual crimes. They bandied about a whole bunch of crimes that they could accuse the president of. Remember, it was bribery. It was extortion. It was this. It was that. It was quid pro quo. Those things would require proof. They have burdens of proof that go along with them. When you make up the charge, you can make up what proves the charge. That's why Democrats chose these things. It is really, it's a disgrace what they've done. And personally, even if everything Democrats are saying is true, I still don't care. At this point, I don't care. If you had shown me in a rational and logical way, in a fair way, that the president of the United States somehow broke the law, which they're not trying to do, but if you had, and even if I liked that president of the United States, I would say the president has to go. You make up charges that you make up the burden of proof for, and you throw an absolute hissy fit. Say it's so important we move now, we can't wait to compel testimony. The threat to our democracy is so great. And then you take a month off. I've got no respect for you. And no concerns about what you think is fair and what you think isn't fair or what concerns you. Just go about your business. The business of the country will be halted, which I think is a good thing for the country, mostly because most of the business that our government does screws things up. So at least you can take comfort in the fact that they won't be screwing anything up anytime soon. I would love it, however, if, like, Mitch McConnell just confirmed a whole bunch of judges right before the impeachment trial started, just crammed them through again, just as a sharp stick in the eye of these little fascists over there running around like they somehow figured out that they're the only ones who can. You know, anybody who thinks that they can save the republic is who the republic needs to be saved from. Take that one to the bank. Anyway, holy crap, we're out of time already. Well, that is all the time we have. Thank you for listening. I didn't get to half the things I intended to. I appreciate it. We'll know who the managers are tomorrow, and we'll report on that. And whatever else happens between now and then, it is, God, it's Wednesday already. Awesome. Have a great Wednesday. I'll see you on Thursday.
Our job is to rebuild the United Nations.